Welcome to TNT's Will podcast. It's the official companion podcast of the TNT series Will. I'm your host, Michael Wood, and each week we'll have an in-depth discussion about the latest episode of the show with its creators. So let me introduce Craig Pearce, who's the creator and executive producer, and Shekhar Kapoor, executive producer and director. It's great to have you both here.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be here.
It's fantastic.
Episode 3, The Two Gentlemen. And this is where the relationship between Shakespeare and his cousin Southwell, the Scarlet Pimpernel, public enemy number one, the most hunted guy in Elizabethan England, this is where that relationship starts to really turn the plot, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, of course, the episode starts with Will waking up from a terrible nightmare. We've ended episode 2 with him saving the day with Kemp and the company. But, of course, his conscience catches up with him very quickly because a man has died in his place. And he needs to seek out his cousin because he needs to confess. He needs absolution. You know, one of the, I think, very powerful things about the Catholic religion is that the act of confession, which is central, a part of the religion, gives you, I'm sure, I'm not Catholic, but it gives you this great sense of relief and redemption and a second chance. So he really needs that, and he seeks out his cousin. But he gets what he wants from his cousin, but of course his cousin wants a lot more from Will than Will is willing to give. And this is a constant tension throughout the show. And of course his cousin Southwell represents, of course, this other pull on Will. There's this huge velocity towards being creative, to creating his own destiny, to creating a new life and becoming a part of a new modern world. And then there's the pull of obligation to a god that he's grown up with that he can't escape but isn't really willing to commit fully to anymore. And this creates a lot of the drama in the series. And of course, Southwell as a character is charismatic. He's a brilliant writer. He's much admired by Will.
And a bestseller, his poetry in the general public.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. So Southwell wants him to go one way and Will wants very much to go another way.
Shekhar, just thinking about the way that Will wanted to go, these fundamental questions, which they're both in their different ways trying to answer, aren't they, about, you know, what is life, what is the meaning of life and all that, it struck me watching it that this is the moment in the show where there's another lift in Shakespeare's own sense of himself, that he starts to realise that there is a path to producing really great art, which touches on our essentials as human beings, which doesn't have to be God-centered.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I think partly that was what his confessing was about, is to expunge. We often confess to expunge. And we are actually, you know, we use confession always to hurt other people. You know, we confess and we've hurt somebody, but we somehow absolved from even hurting them, we just confess. And I think he needed to expunge, and he went there to, because he was feeling things that he didn't want to feel. He was cheating on his wife. He was falling in love with this girl. And he was using something that all artists, Picasso was accused of it. Every big artist has always been accused of pushing guilt out from themselves onto other people so that they can be released for their art. Every artist has done that. You know, read the biographies. And to me, that's exactly what William Shakespeare was doing at that time. He needed to expunge everything out of his mind so that he could be free. It was, you know, the fundamental drive in the whole series is, how do I get the freedom to create? How do I create on a state of to be in a different zone to create? So I have to start expunging and expunging and expunging. But to me also, it was the idea of Robert Southwell saying that actually Catholicism wasn't dead. Underneath the surface of being Protestant, there was a deep idea of Catholicism, because being Protestant didn't replace Christ. Or, you know, it just became another system upon an established system. So how could you get Catholicism out? Mm-hmm. So the idea also was to show that underneath, in those undergrounds there, Catholicism was still alive. And Robert Southwell, there is a line that his words, which is actually, you mentioned words, Robert Southwell's words were more dangerous than the Spanish Armada. Mm. You know, that was in the first episode. Those lines are very, very interesting because that meant that his idea could spread very fast and like wildfire. So he's a really, really dangerous but very charismatic character.
I mean, the irony is that he, you know, what becomes a really important thing in the plot, which is this letter that Sutherland has written to the Queen, the humble supplication. And in it, he says things that you can imagine Shakespeare actually sympathized with, which is that in the end, that the two sides of Christianity, the Protestant and the Catholic, are too close to tear themselves apart like this.
Yeah.
And they're sisters sucking from the same teat of divine mercy, I think he says, you know. That's the tragedy of it, isn't it?
Mm.
But you start to see in this episode Will's ambition to create an art which kind of goes beyond formal religion, doesn't it? I mean, when you, I found myself looking forward to, which I shouldn't, I know, watching these 10 episodes, but looking forward to later in his career when he achieved the freedom to say exactly what he wanted to say.
Mm.
And when you get these great tragedies which are created, you know, where there is no consolation of divine mercy in them, you know. Mm. So he's on a journey now, isn't he? And we sense that he's on a journey in this show.
I think also an interesting thing that we probably can easily forget is that technology played a huge part in this dissemination of ideas in the way that the internet does, with rebellion or the spread of ideas today, because the printing press was a relatively new thing, and certainly the ability to print quickly, have smaller presses that could be broken down and moved into secret. It was like the internet, because suddenly, instead of, you know, having to write something down or whisper something in someone's ear to disseminate an idea, you could print thousands of copies. And this is both true of the theatrical world and Southern's world. So he's getting his ideas out through the printing press like someone would today through Facebook or the internet. And of course, with the players, they didn't want their plays to be distributed widely because there was no intellectual copyright. So the plays would be stolen, and the plays were all locked up in a big strong box in the theatre. But the world was changing rapidly, and technology was leading that change, just as it always has and as it does today with the dissemination of ideas.
I mean, talking about the text, there's some really funny moments in this show, you know, especially the scene with Alice, where they talk about, you know, how am I going to really break through on this playwriting scene? And at one stage she just says, you know, talking about plots, well, just steal them, you know. Yeah. And of course Shakespeare actually does just steal them, doesn't he?
Speaking of Easter eggs, I mean, that's a kind of, because being a young idealistic playwright, he's like, oh, okay, just this once. The joke being that, of course, all writers steal. And you know, Shakespeare was, you know, being one of the greatest writers of all time, was one of the greatest thieves of all time in terms of plots. He borrowed, let's use the polite term, just about every plot he wrote from other sources. You know, it's a kind of Easter egg moment. It's also a sort of a nice, naive moment for an artist who thinks, no, I'm going to do it the pure way, my way. But really, really there's no such thing, because all art influences other art, and all artists work in their own way, and all great artists are great in their own way.
So why can't we just say he reimagined rather than the word steal? He read something, he reimagined, and I think one of the things, look, I have to say this is, brilliant way that Craig did in it, that he constantly is stealing phrases. He's hearing something and he creates a phrase. He's here and he's got this little notebook and he keeps writing down all the stuff. And so he's stealing then. He's stealing everything. He's stealing a plot, but he's stealing. But that is awareness, isn't it?
Mm.
That's you're representing the universe that you live in, and you are taking everything that the universe that you live in and reimagining it and creating another universe. That is ultimately what all artists do.
Mm. As my mum says, oh, you know, but the plots, they're so corny. Shakespeare, so corny.
I mean, you've got to see.
And in a way, he is. But that's. But in another sense, he absolutely isn't, because he's corny. I think what my mum means when she says corny, I think he sees life in its. He can really get to the essence of who a character is and how human beings operate in the world. And they tend to operate in these patterns. So that's why, you know, he writes a character 400 years ago that might be a manipulative political character without any conscience, perhaps, as in, you know, a character like Richard III. And, you know, we see people throughout history, you know, Hitler was one of them, where they are so beyond a sense of, oh, I can't really do that because that's embarrassing. You know, they just do it for power. And people around them go, oh, well, he won't do that because, and then he does it. And you go, oh, okay, well, he did that, but he won't do that. And then he does that.
Oh, my God, you're talking about Trump.
Well, it could be Trump. You know, it could be any kind of political character who is beyond the bounds of what, you know, quote unquote, is normal behavior for a politician at that time. And so by the time they're entrenched, it's like, oh, okay, what we expected of them, they didn't do.
Mm-hmm. Your mum may say, well, Shakespeare's plots are corny, but I mean, Hollywood plots are corny, aren't they?
Exactly.
There are patterns to them all.
Yeah.
And we actually love the fact that they you can start to feel the end, the way the story's going to go. There's a kind of almost destined end to these stories. I mean, you've even got the joke in this episode, haven't you, where the, you know, those kind of people who lecture us about how to construct a really good Hollywood plot. You can go to kind of weekend conferences now to learn how to write a Hollywood script, can't you? You know, with the inciting incident and the episode two-thirds of the way through. And I think Alice teases him about that, doesn't she? Saying, no, this is how they do it, you know.
Yeah. So, well, all of that's true. I mean, the trick is doing it well.
Trick is doing it well. And he does it. He does it well. Mm. I think Ben Jonson, his old friend and rival, got really cheesed off with that in the end, didn't he? Because Shakespeare continually outperformed him in the box office, and he accused him of writing mouldy old tales and tempests and other drolleries, but the audience loved it.
I think a plot would not be a plot unless it was corny.
Absolutely.
You know, the idea of plot means corny.
Structure.
You know, and then the structure is corny because there are only so many structures that you can do. And actually, funny thing is, Shakespeare created some of those. Those corny structures that Shakespeare created last till this day. Whatever he did with Two Gentlemen of Verona when he did Romeo and Juliet. Mm. How many versions of Romeo and Juliet have you seen today? Thousands. Thousands.
Still irresistible.
So, you know, I go to Hollywood and they say, oh, that's a lovely story, but Shakespeare, where's the Romeo and Juliet story in this? I think, what are you talking about? They want a plot. They want something corny to go on. Yeah.
Great. That perfectly sets up the end of this podcast and the beginning of the next one. Thank
Brilliant.
You, Craig.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Fantastic.
Thank you.
Join me next Tuesday for an all-new episode of TNT's Will Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to TNT's Will Podcast in the Apple Podcasts app, and please leave a rating and a review while you're there. And remember, Will is all new Mondays at 9 on TNT. I'm Michael Wood. Thanks for listening.